You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. Makai Watch is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Tahiti Nui, Heaven on Earth, the Greenery Cafe.
Announcing the return of the Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Luau, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style luau is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
Heaven on Earth starts here. Organically grown, GMO-free vegetable starts available at Hoku Foods in Kapa'a, Kauai Seascapes Nursery in Kalihiwai Ridge, and Saturday Morning Market next to Kauai Mini Golf. More information at heavenonearthstarts@gmail.com.
The Greenery Cafe in the heart of Lihue, one block off of Rye Street on Akahi Street, serving flavorful and organic soul food, wraps, smoothies, herbal iced teas, desserts, and vegetarian meals. Located in the lush garden setting near Tip Top Cafe, call-in, takeout, and catering available. Open Monday through Friday for breakfast and lunch. The Greenery Cafe, hearty, healthy soul. 246-4567 or online at thegreenerycafe.com.
Mahalo Tahiti Nui, Heaven on Earth, and the Greenery Cafe for supporting Makai Watch.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Funny, maybe we're ragged and funny, but we'll travel alone, singing a song side by side.
Aloha. Mahalo, Laura Christine. Welcome back to the KKCR world. The studio we're coming to you from today is a bit torn up. If you hear a little bit of an echo, it's not me. Thanks for producing Makai Watch for us, a program about the aina, those things that feed us. We provide information and opportunities for community involvement in the stewardship of our resources on Kauai and throughout Hawaii nei. Makai. Toward the ocean, as all things flow to the sea, and the sea is connected to you and me. The Hanalei Makai Watch program publishes the Hanalei Moon and Tide calendar, now in its fourth printing. We have our 2016 calendars. Please call the office, 826-1985, to receive your copy. My name is Maka'ala. I'd like to thank KKCR for providing this program, and Laura Christine for engineering it for us today. Please remember this program and all of the others on this station are funded by you, our listeners, here on Kauai, in Hawaii, or across the ocean on a land far, far away. Please show your support and join our membership today. We'll be happy to take your calls after we've introduced our subject for today. The number to call is 826-7771. Today our guest is Kevin Chang, Executive Director of Kua'aina Ulu Awamo, Kua. Kevin is joining our program today from Oahu. Welcome, Kevin, and mahalo for joining us today.
Aloha, Auntie. Thank you. Very happy to join you.
Yeah, I'm sorry it was a little glitchy on your end, but I'm glad you have a good, solid, clear landline to call in on.
Yeah.
We appreciate that. I told Laura this is going to be one of those tough interviews for me because I know you. I've discovered that it's harder to interview people that I know than it is people that I don't. So I'm going to pretend I don't know you.
Mm-hmm.
And ask you to start us off by telling us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Kevin Chang, born and raised in the Kahalu area on the island of Oahu. Actually recently found out some of my Chinese family is actually from Hanapepe. My mom is from Oregon, so I'm Chinese-Irish. I'm an attorney, graduate of Castle High School, and finished my schooling at the University of Oregon. And I also play music with a band called Kupa'aina, which means simple island people. Our music is about place and justice and culture and community. And that kind of is the combination of my music and my legal background sort of led me into doing work relating to community, culture, and place, working first in land conservation at the Trust for Public Land and then at the Office of Hawaiian Affairs and Land Management. And now today I'm working with an organization called Kua'aina Ulu Awamo, or Kua.
It's fascinating. Okay. It's a fascinating path you took to get to that. I will let folks know as a disclaimer that I'm on the board of directors of Kua'aina Ulu Awamo and work with Kevin in that capacity. But I also know that there are communities on Kauai that participate with Kua, most notably Haena and Hanalei, and we have a couple on the south side now, right?
Yes. Some folks in Koloa and folks, is it Numilu?
Yes, Numilu, yeah. I think someday we'll have somebody from your mother's, or yeah, the Chinese side, the Hanapepe side. That'll be a good thing. The salt makers there have a lot of concerns and issues related to what I consider to be the World Heritage Site of Hanapepe Salt Pond. So that might be an interesting addition to your work as well.
Very cool.
I want to let folks know a little bit about Kua. I did not begin with the original organization until it had sort of started, but it began with the Community Conservation Network in Hawaii, and which was based on Oahu, and started doing a few projects around the state, not so much on Kauai, and was the effort on Kauai began to be led by a lady by the name of Debbie Goen-Smith, whom we all still turn to for advice and information and best moves forward. But tell me a little bit about after that. So Hawaii Community Stewardship Network came next. That was the next iteration.
Mm-hmm.
And you became aware of that organization.
Yeah, essentially the way I describe Kua is that we are a nonprofit organization. It was called into existence by a network of communities, some who have been meeting as far back as 2003 through the CCN, or the Community Conservation Network. And between that year, I guess 2002, 2003, and 2011, really the network was kind of kept together by Debbie through different machinations, but basically through fiscal sponsorship relationships and this kind of organization that wasn't legally created yet, called the Hawaii Community Stewardship Network. And that organization really helped that network kind of convene annually. And she tried to do a lot of capacity work with the different communities to help them get their programs going during all that time. I guess around 2011, Debbie had to move to Colorado because her husband got a good job. And so when that happened, the network was essentially kind of had an advisor council that would advise Debbie, and they essentially asked Debbie if she was going to leave to find somebody or find an entity or create an entity that could carry these activities forward, and that was to create a nonprofit. And the Castle Foundation actually was a big supporter in that. So in 2012, the Advisory Council essentially interviewed me and hired myself and my deputy director, Miwa Tamanaha, to work to create the nonprofit that would carry forward the work that the network wanted. And that's how Kua came into being. We created Kua because we created the name Kua, or Kua'aina Ulu Awamo, because it seemed more appropriate and easier to remember than the Hawaii Community Stewardship Network.
Yeah, for sure.
And the name Kua'aina Ulu Awamo, which means grassroots, growing through shared responsibility, more embodied, I think, the spirit of the communities that we work with. And the acronym itself, KUA, means backbone, which sort of embodies the spirit of that idea that the communities wanted a kind of lasting entity to be created so that their convenings, their kind of capacity workshops, their ability to teach and share with each other could keep going through this kind of backbone organization.
It's a very interesting process, and we're ending up with a way cool product as well. So I'll take us back to the very beginning, and that was a conversation between Debbie and Mac Poi Poi and Momi many years ago, and he was trying his level best to teach people the right way to take care of the fishing resources in Mo'omomi. He was being fished, the area was being fished by people from outside Molokai and people who didn't understand, and he was also dealing with some of the regulators and some of the rulemakers who had laws and rules to follow that, for him at least in Mo'omomi, didn't work, didn't make sense, and were not reflective of what the resources were actually doing. And Debbie asked him, "So, Uncle Mac, what can we do to help you?" And he said, "Gather us." And so when you talk about convening us, that's the whole point, right? To gather us. One of the things, and we're hearing a lot of it now, at least over here, I don't know how much is being said on Oahu, but for us on Kauai, having only one airlines, and having that airline cost money, lots of money sometimes, is difficult. It's hard for us to visit family. It's hard for us to go to the doctor. It's hard for us to do a lot of different things, but it's certainly hard for us to gather, to join other communities that are doing similar work. So organizations such as Castle Foundation and Debbie folks realized that this was a block. This was a stopper. This was a fact that was very hard to overcome and to get past. And we have sort of now created this larger network that allows us to get together. There's nothing more powerful than being in a group of people who are working to do similar kinds of things and hear from each other and learn from each other. Not one of us has, you know, all the answers, of course. So, but KUA itself is actually based on Oahu, is that true?
Yeah, our physical office is on Oahu.
Where is
in,
that?
In Kahului at the Kualoa Ecumenical Youth Project, one of our state's first community grassroots community centers.
Being consistent. Yeah. So I heard you mention Castle Foundation. How else is KUA funded?
Some of our other funders include the Office of Hawaiian Affairs. KUA now, so I kind of neglected to say that. So we facilitate networks of communities, and that kind of founding network of KUA was eventually became named Ealupu. That's a network that sort of Uncle Mac sparked. People often refer to Mac as kind of the godfather. And since KUA was started, we've also taken on some kuleana in facilitating two other networks, Hui Malama Loko Ia, which is a fish pond restoration network of about 40 fish ponds across the state.
Wow.
And the Limuhui, which is made up of elder kupunas interested in perpetuating and restoring Limu areas. And Ealupu is actually grew from about, I think, 10 to 12 community groups to about 32 now statewide. And so we try to keep in touch with everybody in some way or other throughout the day from our little office in Kahului.
Thank goodness for internet and telephone, and
yes,
for some of our communities that use neither, you know, coconut wireless and flying over there and sitting down with them is sometimes necessary as well. I know sometimes wish we had just a direct ferry for all of those communities that want to get together. No, folks, not the super ferry, just a regular little ferry. So if someone has been working with fish ponds for a long time and trying to do that work on their own, one of the things they came across was the issue of permitting. There was a lot of things that people wanted to do to restore their local fish ponds, and they would get stuck. They would get stuck with the state, and they would get stuck with the federal government. They would get stuck with the counties.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're all in a hui now and talking to each other and organizing, some important things have happened, right?
Yeah. So since the first meeting I went to of the hui, which is like 3 years ago at that time, working with Keha Watson, there was an effort to work with our state to streamline some of that process. And so last year, our governor, Ige, signed into law a bill that basically streamlines the process where fish ponds now can go to one person in one department who will sort of finagle all the different permits around the state that they got to get together into one package, other than the federal government. The federal government still has its own thing. But so that supposedly will help to simplify the process. I think at one point, depending on the type of fish pond you had, it could take up to upwards of over 15 permits and up to $250,000 just to get the permission to do the work.
Yeah, extraordinary.
So that streamlining will help a lot.
Yes, no kidding. If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Kevin Chang, who is the executive director of Kua, Kua Aina Ulu Awamo, and most of Kua's work is centered around natural and cultural resources. For those of you that don't live in Hawaii, fish ponds were throughout our state. They were on every island, and they provided sustenance for most communities. I heard a number the other day, I don't know what it was, 120 plus were on Oahu. We don't think of Oahu that way. We certainly think of a lot of them on Molokai, and we know we have several on Kauai, but many of these fish ponds are no longer in service, but there are some important key ones that are being revitalized, and it was very frustrating to do until everybody did what we call here hui'd up, where we all got together and said, okay, there has to be a way that we can streamline the process so that restoration of these resources can occur and prevent the development of those places, because fish ponds were in specific places for specific reasons. And as soon as a hotel goes up there, you're sort of done. I know for the North Shore of Kauai, when we worked on the restoration of Halulu Fish Pond at Waipa, we asked, do we need a NPDES, the permit that you need if you're going to be working in the water or creating a hole? And they said, no, you're not doing anything. No. Then we dug a hole, and then it rained in the hole, and then we had water in the hole, and then we needed an NPDES permit. So, you know, the insanity of that process and the difficulty for community folks. These are folks who really know their fish and really know their places and really know their fish ponds, but they really don't know, you know, the government process. So one of the key jobs that Kua performs for all of us here and as an example for other places around the world is trying to cut through that and get to the right people to write the stuff and call the right person to say there must be a better way, there must be an easier way for those of us that want to do this kind of work. For Kauai, as an example, the county, we had to step over a grubbing and grading permit. And we went to the county and said, you know, maybe we don't really need that. This is a fish pond. This is a traditional thing. This is an ancient thing. And they didn't know how to get around it. So unless you have somebody able to, you know, creatively write them a way around it, it can be harder than it should be. And I'm assuming the same thing. I'm not as connected with the limu hui as the fish pond folks. They're working in several places as well, right?
Yeah, I think the limu hui sort of distinguishes itself in that it's right now their focus has been in gathering kind of kupunas, not so much like organizations, but they are from all over the state. Some of them more sophisticated in their thinking of restoration. Some of them more bringing the traditional knowledge on use of limu, but the focus has been really on trying to gather and perpetuate that knowledge and see where it goes, and hopefully it grows towards proactively passing that knowledge on when it's good to be passed on, but also hopefully restoring places like Uncle Henry Chang Wo, who's kind of the catalyst for the Limuhui, passed away last year. He actually had an area in Ewa designated for some preservation for traditional practice. And so, my hope really is, because these networks have to evolve in the ways that the communities want them to evolve. So there's no like forcing the issue on things. It really has to, a network moves from being more informal to becoming formal, then becoming generative. And so, it moves at the pace of community.
Mm-hmm. It's an organic process.
Yeah. And if you took like Ealupu, they've been meeting long enough that there's enough kind of trust and aloha in the kind of gears of that one, that it moves a little more smoothly. They can find common goals more quickly, and Kua itself can help them identify those things quickly rather than the extended dialogue that some issues may need in the beginning.
Yeah. Well, we're all learning how to take care of our places again. We knew it once, and this is true all over the world. So many examples of places that are figuring this out, rediscovering the discovered, relearning the learned, and redoing what we know how to do, and trusting ourselves that we actually know how to do this stuff. You know, we've been told, many of us, for a long time that only the government or the universities or the scientific entities know how to do this stuff, and it's just not so. We can do it in partnership with them, but that's just not so, and we're proving it every day with organizations like KUA. KUA offers an opportunity to support those places and people that want to do these things. KUA is not an organization that comes into your community and says, you know, we're running this really cool thing over there, and we've been looking at your place, and we think that this might really work for you. That is not something that KUA does, and hence the reason that I'm as involved as I am, because I don't think you get much done if people feel like they're being told to do it. If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Kevin Chang, who's the executive director of Kua'aina Ulu Awamo. It's an organization here in Hawaii doing work that is certainly useful and exportable and an example of some that's being done all over the world. Talk a little bit about the staff of KUA, because in order to get this done, it takes a staff. It takes a crew, and you've managed to, overwork everybody, but also get some really key people in places that they can help with some of these specific subjects as well. I mean, nothing happens without some organization helping with the paperwork. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're asking about who our current staff are.
And what they do. Yeah.
There is now 5 full-time, 3 part-time staff, myself and Miwa Tamanaha sort of help to build the organization and are sort of developing, the administration and the fundraising aspect of things, and continuing to kind of guide our network facilitators. We have 3 networks. Each network has a facilitator. Ealupu has Alex Connolly, who has a background in botany, and has actually been working with me since I was at OHA. But she helps to kind of gather the Ealupu network together. Brenda Asuncion, who has a master's and a background in marine biology, is the facilitator for the Hui Malama Lokoia. She's been with us now for 2.5 years. And then our newest network facilitator is Wallace Ito. Uncle Wally, recently retired from the State Department of Transportation. He actually has been a participant in the network for almost the past 10 years, I think, working with Uncle Henry at the Eva Limu Project. And then more recently, actually, Uncle Wally's part-time. Uncle Wally's part-time. And then more recently, we've taken on Lauren Muneoka, who works part-time and helping us really, it's really Miwa, kind of hash out the details of what it means to, you know, manage our books and all the little bureaucratic things that, and processes we need to have to maintain a nonprofit. And then Kimberly Moa, who's a professional photographer and has some background in communications, is our new communications person who's going to be helping us kind of better do outreach and inreach within the network in terms of our website, social media, and other forms of media.
It takes a village, huh? It takes a canoe. It takes a full load of paddlers to keep this canoe afloat. One of the things that happens, folks, when you get funding from a variety of sources is that you have to keep a lot of records and write a lot of reports and also keep asking for more. And so all those things require, you know, staff and people to stay on top of it. It's a nonprofit, and deductions are given and donations are gladly accepted for this work. And it's an effort to help communities do what communities want to do. I still remember one of the very first gatherings we had of what we now call Ealupu, was at Eva and was with Uncle Henry, showing us that we could plant limu. And it just occurred to me, folks, if you don't know, limu is seaweed. It's an edible, important edible component of the diet, provides a lot of good nutrition and important minerals, including iodine. And it's also a bit of a canary in the coal mine, because if the water quality coming into a nearshore area is less than it should be, the limu will tell you. The limu will show you that there's a problem. And that's what was going on at Eva. There had been some development that Uncle Henry attributed poor water quality and poor limu to, and the fact that it used to be a famously productive limu area, and people were coming and taking. So the combination of over-harvesting and reduced water quality and an absentee community of traditional practitioners. There weren't very many people continuing to live in that place who understood the resource and who needed the resource and who were concerned about its future. So all of those things in one fairly small place called Eva, Eva Beach, took Uncle Henry's issue through a lot of legal processes. He's been in hearings before the state boards. He's looking for some legal action as well. So all these kinds of advocacy efforts are initiated by the people. Uncle Henry blew the whistle and said, something is wrong here. The limu is not there, and what's there doesn't look good, and I need the limu to live. And so do my grandchildren. And based on that observation and that call, he just stuck to it. Some of us got a little weary of listening to his story of this limu thing at certain points in time, but we knew he was on the right track, and indeed he was. He will be sorely missed, but his work continues. In a very interesting development, Kua Aina Ulu Awamo, or Kua, has been designated to carry his legal action forward. Is that true?
Yeah, that's correct.
That's a big deal, right? That's kind of very, very cool that the court recognized that this was an important important thing to do, and that Kua could stand in for one of our elders, one of our kupuna who had passed away and waiting for the right thing to happen. I'm going to take a brief break, and Laura's going to bring up some music that Kevin provided, and if you're a very good listener of music, you'll recognize the voice. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Oh, oh, oh. deeper. Now they're selling the rock and they're sinking deeper. Where's the aloha? We are simple island people.
We are simple island people.
People of the land and sky and sea. Lungs and now the sign says keep up. This cuckoo really coming from your soul. It's called for working to help the ones who need it most. E kule yana ika maka oka aina nana aku ina amaku. E ho olo he po no no. We are simple island people. We are simple island people. People of the land and sky and sea.
Shout out to Kupa Aina. Mahalo, Kevin, for sending us the song. I'm going to start pressing the station to play a little bit more of Kupa Aina. So, folks, if you didn't recognize the voice, it's the voice of Kevin. And the whole point of that band and those songs, and that one particularly, is the same as what we're talking about with Kua Aina Ulu Awamo. Kevin Chang is the executive director of Kua Aina Ulu Awamo, as well as, I don't know, what do you call yourself? Songwriter, lead singer, band leader?
I don't know.
Of Kupa
Aina. Singer, songwriter for Kupa Aina.
There you go, singer, songwriter for Kupa Aina. If you have a chance to catch them on Oahu, they do play other places, but most often you play on Oahu. Where are you playing? I know you're playing coming up this week.
Well, we only really have one kind of monthly public gig at the Diamond Head Health Cove. It's a Ava bar in Waikiki every third Thursday of the month, around 8 p.m. to like 11 p.m.
Now, if that doesn't sound like fun, folks, I don't know what does. Yeah, an Ava bar in Waikiki. Only
on the edges of Waikiki, I would say. More
okay.
Like a couple hulu.
Outskirts. Okay. I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that Kua is paying attention to, and I don't want to run out of time, so I'm going to talk first about the World Conservation Congress that's coming up, because I know that Kua is participating in that, and folks need to start hearing more about that pretty soon. I'm not hearing too much about it in the media quite yet. So,
mm-hmm.
So would you talk just a little bit about that and Kua's involvement?
The World Conservation Congress is some people refer to it as the Conservation Olympics, or it's the largest gathering of people interested in environmental conservation in the world. It happens every 4 years in a different country. They've been meeting for over 60 years now. And this will be the first time ever that it's been hosted in the United States. And it'll be hosted by the state of Hawaii in part as kind of like it. Usually it's the federal government that would take the lead, but it's really Hawaii in this case because of, I think, the importance that our community made about our culture, our people, and our environment on the global stage in the last convening in Korea. So that's occurring from September 1st to the 10th at the convention center over here.
It's going to be amazing. I think they're expecting 10,000 people, yeah?
Yeah, and what's cool, at least on our end, is actually when I started this job, I had the opportunity, because of my past work at OHA, to go to Korea and attend the Congress and to see that there's a changing face of conservation, and kind of that growing and changing face is one that more better reflects the grassroots, indigenous, and community groups out there who are trying to meet the challenge and collaborate and work better with the government to take care of our resources. And so I wanted to find an opportunity for our folks to kind of utilize this year to see that what they're doing here is really happening around the world, and hopefully give them an opportunity to meet some of their peers.
It's going to be an extraordinary opportunity for some of our communities to share what they're doing. It isn't just an opportunity for people to come here, excuse me, and tell us what they're doing someplace else. It's also a chance for us to say and show what we're doing. And they have things called smaller gatherings, pavilions, and different kinds of opportunities. They also are going to be offering some off-island events for people coming to the conference or before the Congress starts and after. And so some of the outer islands will also be venues for these activities and opportunities for us to show what we're doing and have conversations with people who are doing similar work all over the world. It's an extraordinary opportunity, and it's a Herculean effort to pull this thing off. And those of us that are just wanting to tag along and hanging on to the end of somebody's shirt tail can appreciate the size and enormity of this project. But it's going to be really cool, a chance for us to show our traditions and our practices, and for us to learn about others. So I hope folks who start hearing more about that coming up in September. I'm assuming early summer we'll start amping up the media a little bit. And Kua will participate?
Yeah, so actually as of this week, well, I'm still waiting, but Kua applied for a membership in the IUCN, and I have a small group of kupunas kind of working on a motion that we're hoping we can submit to the Congress this Thursday. And if it's accepted, I'm hoping that they have an opportunity to debate it on the floor before the Congress. So the Congress is almost like, kind of like this stuff you see in the movies where it's the United Nations and all these different languages, cultures, and nations are in the room. And so there's over 140 countries involved in this World Conservation Congress. And so I'm hoping that we'll have an opportunity for, you know, a group of you guys to actually sit in that convening and make a point, whether or not our motion carries or not, but that's what we're working on.
That sounds fabulous, just to have that opportunity. It's an extraordinary thing, and it can be very empowering. You know, for people who are working hard and struggling in their own isolated rural communities to be able to bring their concerns and their issues and their successes and triumphs forward to people from all over the world like that, it can really boost you and charge you up, you know, and make you realize that what you're doing is important to other people, not just in your place. It can be very motivating. So there's also our legislature in the state of Hawaii, folks, just convened. It does not do business all year round. some of us think that's a good thing, and some of us aren't so sure. But at this point, they have just convened, and we're watching a few things on behalf of our communities. What's on your radar this session?
Actually, because of the network's interest in sort of helping the Ka'upulehu kind of rule amendment about their fishery replenishment area, I haven't been able to give as much time to the legislature, but there are a few bills in the legislature regarding community-based subsistence fishing areas that are floating around. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, maybe 2023, HB 2023, and 2579. But I've been really trying to just follow those things in partnership with different community members. But I also know there are many others out there. I've just been focusing on sort of the marine community management-oriented bills. There also is a bill so the Senate and House bill both proposing to help kind of increase our state's capacity to work with communities, build up bull carriers capacity, as well as permanently hiring planners and outreach people to work with communities on community-based subsistence fishing areas, as well as Makai Watch. So that's what I'm kind of following right now.
Those are efforts that really are near and dear to the heart of Kua, because the CBSFA, for one, came out of a community effort to manage its own resources. It stands for Community-Based Subsistence Fishing Area. And the first one that actually was approved, its rules were approved, and it's moving forward with a management plan, is here on this island on Kauai and Haena, on the North Shore, and is a model for other communities to follow. And there are several communities within Kua, within our organization, and others that are not part of Kua, that are very interested in doing the same thing, and they're watching to see the process and progress of our effort. And so now the state is proposing some legislation to fiscally support the coordination of that effort. But that's the kind of thing we're talking about, things that started in the community. Makpoipoi is saying, your fishing rules don't fit my place. When you say don't catch because the fish are spawning, the fish aren't spawning in my place at that time. This is when they're spawning, and your rules say everybody come during that time, and that's just not the way it works. So to get down to specific, correct planning and practice, the communities have to be the ones in the lead, not following, not tagging along, but in the lead. And it's hard to do. It's very hard to do, and it's even harder to do when you're all on islands. So I know Kua spends a fair bit of resources gathering us. The last gathering we had in Kona was a lot of people. It was well over 100 folks. Is that about right?
Yeah, well, 140.
Oh, my goodness. For me, it was like being in Hawaiian immersion school. It was down in the sand in Ho'okena and learning about places like Ka'upulehu. Now, you just mentioned Ka'upulehu. Ka'upulehu is a place on the Big Island in Kona that is saying, we want rules. We want to be able to say in their language, in their jargon, tri-weight. Tri-weight is the local speak for we need to rest these things. Please give our resources a chance to come back. And what are they asking for, Kevin?
They have I guess they're part of what's a larger West Hawaii fisheries area, and they have an area near them called a fisheries replenishment area, and they're asking to amend the rules for a smaller designated area within that larger area, in which I guess they want to close off fishing and ask the community to wait for 10 years to see if those fisheries will replenish. And in the meanwhile, in those 10 years, they plan to work on a management plan, increase outreach, and do the research needed to understand how that place gains its health back.
So is the focus of that location over harvesting or water quality or all of the above?
Usually, I think they try to address all of the above, but in this case, it does address fishing. That community at one point was really closed off to the rest of the state until they built a highway through there, and then hotels came in, and the people of the area saw the fish depletion go down. So it really has to do with bringing back fish to that area so that they can once again fish like they used to.
And there's people alive today that have noticed the decline. We're not talking about records of 100 years ago. These are within the last 20, 25 years. I'm trying to remember when the highway went in, but it wasn't that long ago. And
yeah.
And it's really, it's provided an access that with an unintended consequence. I don't think anybody building a highway thinks about how it's going to impact the fishery.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Kevin Chang, who is the executive director of Kua'aina Lu'awamo Kua. And we're talking about an effort right now in support of Ka'upulehu, which is a small community on the island of Hawaii in Kona that is saying, we're seeing our fisheries deplete. We're seeing a decline in the numbers and the kinds of fish. These are fish that we need to eat, and we're asking ourselves and everyone else to stop and rest for a while and see if we can't bring that fishery back. They're not just asking for other people from outside not to come and take fish. They're imposing this on themselves, that's correct?
Yeah, and if you want more detailed information, you can go to our website, kuahawaii.org, and click on our blog, and there's going to be some links there with some of the information that the community has been trying to get out, and you can download it from there.
Great. That's another good service. Right? So one of the values of this thing is that when people learn that other communities are doing the kinds of things that they want to do, then they want to learn how, and that's a service that Kua provides through Ayalupu, gathering them. But Kua also does some interesting, they do some trainings, they have a lending library for some things. So tell me a little bit about some of those resources from Kua.
Yeah, so we do smaller, more focused trainings, whether it's if the community wants to learn something about advocacy or water quality or research or how to use, it could be like, how do I use the internet? I mean, it could be that simple, and it could be as complex as doing a strategic plan. So if the communities decide what they want, and we have a list of different things they've talked about over the years, then when we can find the resources, we try to create the workshops for that. And then we also have been cultivating tools and information that we're hoping to put up on our website at some point, kind of as an online library for communities to access in partnership with a whole bunch of other folks. And then we also have what we've called a lending library, where we actually have physical tools in which communities who need them to do their work but don't necessarily need to own them in the long term can borrow them, and then rather than carrying the cost of ownership, we can pool funds and leverage everyone's ability to get those things by creating this lending library. We also, on occasion, will do fiscal sponsorships for smaller projects. Most folks in the community who want to start doing this kind of management work need help or need to start somewhere, and we've identified fiscal sponsorship as one of those things we can try to do to help them. But that's still kind of in a pilot phase, but it is something we do.
It's an interesting offering because, for example, a student in a small place wants to do some water quality work as part of a science project, or wants to better understand a component of their nearshore resources, just getting a microscope, just getting some of those kinds of equipment, just those kinds of tools, can be the block, can be the reason that they don't move forward, that it doesn't get done. And for those of you that don't live in Hawaii, we still have those places. There are places in Hawaii that are quite isolated and quite rural, and do need this kind of support, this kind of help. And I know we talked about how many. I know it's 32 groups statewide that participate with E Alupu, but they run the gamut. They run from the big city dudes to the isolated fishermen in Mililii. It's quite an extraordinary effort, and it requires a great deal of coordination and care. As you know, you try to help people without taking their capacity, giving them capacity and giving them help and lifting them up rather than, you know, dragging them behind. It's a unique model, Kevin. I think we should all be proud of it. And what's on the forefront for Kua? What's coming up for Kua besides, let's see, besides the World Conservation Congress and the legislative session and heaven only knows what else? But what's on the horizon?
And then Kaupuleho, which is this week. There is also supposed to be some kind of public meeting or hearing regarding the Haiana management plan. We haven't gotten a date yet, but that's happening. But maybe the bigger picture along the way is really helping the network help each other more on kind of creating more community-based fishing areas, subsistence fishing areas, or whatever they may want. It's really working with our government to better kind of allow citizens to participate in government. So, you know, there's a lot of kind of projects existing within the network regarding fisheries, things like access, restoring cultural sites, bringing back values, you know, in regards to like ahupua'a management or bringing back practices. So I mean, there's too many things.
Yeah, not exactly a blank slate. There's too many things to even think about. It makes you tired to think about it, huh?
Yeah, when you guys are able to kind of focus in on something, that's really when it happens. So it's a generative process, so there are things that, you know, I can't identify that one day you guys are going to be sitting at the table and saying, let's address this together, you know, so.
Yeah, for sure. And the fact is, it is community-generated. That's what you mean by generative, and it comes from the community. It doesn't come from you or me or the government or anybody else. It comes from community saying, this is something we're concerned about. This is something we want to do something about. And we're not exactly sure where to start. We don't know how to move. We don't know what to do first or second. And I want to particularly appreciate Kevin's leadership and the whole staff of Kua'ina Uluoamo. It's an extraordinary work done for all the right reasons and done in places that matter, places that will make a difference in the world. Many of the places that we talk to around the Pacific are in deep distress in these times and worried. Sea level rise and climate change and all these things are causing impacts in their places that they had never considered, never thought of. And so, indeed, holding hands together and approaching these issues together is the only way it's really going to happen. I want to thank you, Kevin, very much for taking the time. I know I caught you in the middle of a conference, and I apologize for interrupting that, but I appreciate the time that you spent with us today and want to let you know that anytime Kua is doing something particular that you'd like to get out in the world, please let us know, because we would love to have you or any member of your staff come on and talk to us about the next steps.
Cool. That sounds very good. Thank you for your kind words, Auntie. I mean, you know, all the details we talked about are nice, but we could also be summarized as basically high-level cat herders. Or, you know,
an anti-wrangler.
Wedding arrangers, wedding planners.
And anti-wranglers for all of the listeners.
Yeah, anti-wranglers, basically.
That know me, it's not a small job nor a small challenge. Just wrangling me around Honolulu is a trip in and of itself, and Kua has the job more often than they'd like. Thank you, Kevin. I really appreciate your time today. I want to let folks know that the March 14th Makai Watch show will be focused on the Hawaii state bird. No, it's not the helicopter. It's the nene. And we're going to have the folks that are actually doing a habitat conservation plan for the nene come in and talk to us about that plan. And the next month's program on April 11th, we'll be talking about the Haena State Park Master Plan. The Citizens Advisory Committee has been working on that, and they, at that point, believe that they'll be ready to put some information out to the community. So with that, I'm mahalo KKCR and mahalo Laura Christine for engineering for us, and we will see you next month. Aloha. Ahui ho.
As long as we're together, it doesn't matter at all. Well, they've all had the quarrels and parted. We'll be the same as we started, just traveling along, singing our song.